Hi, my name is Mike and this is The Goods. You're listening to episode 9, part 2. In this series, we go behind the scenes of the Spartan Games and learn how Herman Demick prepared in just 72 hours. We're picking up the story at 11:49 p.m., just days before the competition begins. Let's turn back to October in 2020. Can you tell me about the phone call you received late one Monday night around midnight?
So anybody that follows the Spartan world probably will know Yancey Culp. So I get a phone call at, it was like 11:45, 12 o'clock on a Monday night. And this is, I don't know, maybe 10 days or so after I randomly participated in a Decastrong event that was locally held. I'd never heard of it before. I had no idea what it was. I've never done a Spartan race. But I get a phone call from him and says, Herman, are you awake? And I'm like, well, I am now. And he's like, I got a question for you. And I'm like, is anybody dead? Why are we calling in the middle of the night? And he's like, well, we've got this event that has been somewhat of a secret to the outside world that we're going to be hosting the end of this week. We're trying to crown the fittest person on the planet. And we're only inviting 12 people. Can you come?
Wow.
And I'm trying to get out of my kind of sleepy stupor. And I'm thinking to myself, this is an opportunity that doesn't just come by. And I'm looking at my wife and my wife's like, who on earth is calling at midnight? And I'm like, I'll tell you in a minute. And I'm like, hey, I'm not prepared. I don't know what this is going to look like, but the way I understand it, they had already picked their 12 to go compete. I don't know who it is. I have an inclination who it is, but let's just say that I think this person is a very well-known CrossFitter who has been either podiumed or close to podium multiple years. And I think maybe had an injury or something happen and he couldn't come. So what they ended up doing was saying, who do we call last minute that can actually compete and try and represent what we need done? And 10 days prior, I competed in a Spartan-sponsored event called Decastrong that I had never heard of. I had just gotten back from a long road trip. I got out of my car and they're like, hey, can you do this? Well, I'm nursing a calf injury. Like, I'm not going to do this. And they're like, hey, we just want to be able to show the Spartan community that we can get numbers because we would like to host another event like this in the future. And we just need as many people to participate. Will you come? And just out of being a friend, I was like, yeah, sure. No problem. You know what? Like I'll support you. And I show up and I start lacing up my shoes. Competitive juices started flowing. And I'm like, maybe I'm going to go a little harder than what I originally thought I was. I hadn't done much of anything in a couple of weeks. And I just got out of a car from a road trip. And I'm like, all right, let's see what happens. So one thing led to another. And I set the world record that day on Decastrong.
Wow.
The fastest time they'd ever had.
And what is Decastrong?
So Decastrong is 10 stations comprising of some skier, some assault bikes, some rowing, some farmer's carries, weighted reverse lunges, burpees, sled pushes, box jumps. And it's these 10 sequential events that you have to do as fast as possible. Up to that point, the fastest time in the world was recorded at 13 minutes and 43 seconds. And I completed that day in 12 minutes and 14 seconds. However, it was unofficial. On station 6, I think station 6, if I remember correctly, is a 25 calorie assault bike. But the first 25 seconds of me just cutting it loose, zero calories. It didn't register.
Oh, devastating.
So I get off. This is still in the middle of this one. I get off and I walk away and I'm like, I'm done. Cause it's not like it's station 1 or 2. At this stage, I'm already 7 minutes in as hard as I can go. And I'm not in good enough shape to try and redo it. So I'm like, all right, I'm done. And I walk away. And all of a sudden they see another bike off to the side. And they're like, go hop on that bike, go hop on that bike. So I go and I hop on the other bike. But meanwhile, I'm short, right? I'm not a tall guy. And if anybody that knows assault bike, the seat is set on like level 11 or 12 I can't reach the pedals. So I have to stand up and pedal, not with my butt on the seat. And somebody's trying to like fiddle with the seat so they can lower it so I can try and ride. So I finally finish my calories and I get off, go to the next one. And then the ninth station is what's called a tank push pull. So like the torque tank, you have to push it 10 meters and pull it 10 meters five times for a total of 100 meters.
It replicates like a heavy sled. Yes,
replicates like a heavy sled. So you basically just, you push it, you push a sled and then drag a sled, push a sled and drag a sled. In all of the craziness that's going on, what should have taken me about a minute and probably 10 seconds to bike the 25 cals, it ended up taking, I think, a little over 2 minutes. That's almost a full minute in penalty, almost a full minute in what I could have technically done. Then gets crazier. I get to station 9 of the 10 stations and you have to push it down and back five times. So I'm pushing and pulling and pushing and pulling. And the director there was like, "Hey, which one is he on?" And my judge yells, "He's finishing 4. He's finishing 4. So I push it all the way down and all the way back for one more to complete 5. And the judge goes, "Go." And I go to the next station. I finish the burpees and I call it. And I'm thinking, wow, with almost a minute penalty, with all of this going on, I broke the world record by over a minute and a half, or almost a minute and a half. I get a phone call the next day and they've watched the film, but I only pushed the tank 4 times down and back, not 5.
There was a miscount.
And then if you watch the Spartan Games, it is about 20 to 25 seconds down and back. It's usually 2.5 minutes for the total 100 meters 5 times. Mm. So in that instance, basically I was given a break and I was penalized. And they just felt it was fair to not even consider that my time that day never happened because of all the things that happened. So they're like, "Okay, we're just going to say that this never happened. Like, we can't validate your score because that would be wrong." But it opened some eyes to the fact that, hey, this guy can do something. Even if I was not crowned the world record holder, so what? That's fine. Jared Cogswell is one of the lead people for Decastrong. It was him and Yancey Culp and Corinna Coffin and Ryan Kent, the two athletes and the two people that really like kicked off the whole idea of Decastrong or DecaFit. They have multiple iterations of it. And in my post-race interview, Jared says, "Where did you come from and how do you train? And first off, what do you have to say about being the world record holder?" Because we didn't know all of this at the time. We didn't know that I technically wasn't. He's like, "What do you have to say about that?" I was like, "My honest answer is, if I'm your world record holder today, you haven't tested the right people yet." Right? It was cool to supposedly have the title at that point, but I knew that wasn't the case. And they're like, "What do you do for your workouts?" I'm like, "I chase my 3 and my 5-year-old." They're laughing. They're like, "And you got kids? Like what? Oh, and you have a full-time job away from fitness?" But it was that story that got me my phone call, because they're like, "Hey, this guy in a Spartan sponsored event is our unofficial world record holder. How do we not invite him to the Spartan Games?" Mm. You know, your original question, walk me through that phone call that I got from Yancey Culp at 11:45, 12 o'clock on a Monday night. And it was because I unofficially set a world record in a Spartan sponsored event that I'd never heard of before.
Wow, that's really cool. How did Blair react after you hung up the phone? I imagine things were pretty crazy in your mind about what the possibilities might be, but what was the conversation that happened next?
I'm only laughing because I feel like everybody that's going to listen to this has seen the State Farm commercials. Jake from State Farm. "Oh, who is she?" Like calling in the middle of the night. I'm like, "It's Jake from State Farm. Like, what's he wearing? Khakis. Who's this calling in the middle of the night?" I'm like, "Honey, that's one of the directors of Spartan and DECA, and they just invited me on a private trip to Joe DeSena's ranch in Vermont to compete on the Spartan Games." And she's like, "Go."
Wow.
Okay. So I knew I wasn't prepared, but at that stage, I just said, "Hey, I cannot turn down this opportunity to have this potential life-changing chance or opportunity to compete on that platform again, even if I'm not ready, even if I'm not prepared. Like, I just have to kind of use my science to hopefully make my smarter beat their harder. But ultimately, we understood that it doesn't matter how tactically smart you are. If you don't have a base, you can't expect to win.
Yeah. And you mentioned that Yancey introduced it as a secret event. Had you heard any rumblings about what it might have been? Was there even at that point a title of the event that was shared with you?
No, in fact, even when they offered it to me, I had to sign a non-disclosure. Like it wasn't something that anyone was even allowed to talk about. Not until we showed up to the ranch.
You mentioned that you weren't ready to compete and the competition started that weekend. What happened next?
So Tuesday morning, I already had an overnight trip scheduled that I had to leave town for the next 48 hours of the 72 hours. So I've got 72 hours to prepare and 48 of it is not even spent at home. I have to get in my car for my medical sales job and drive an hour and a half, 2 hours away, go work all day, stay the night, get up, go work all day the next day before I could even come back to even think about this. And I'm also expected to have a mountain bike ready, pack, and I have to get a COVID test within 7 days of flying out. And then you also have to get another COVID test getting off the airplane before you're allowed into the bubble. So all of these things are going through. And honestly, I got in the car that Tuesday morning. I went to work. I worked all day. That Tuesday night, I pulled out my Theragun and my Compex unit, and I just started doing some tissue work. It wasn't a matter of whether or not I could be more physically active. Like the last thing I'm going to do is try and be inactive and then all of a sudden be like, hey, I'm going to train really hard for 3 days and then show up sore. No. So I spent probably an hour and a half just doing some mobility, some foam rolling, making sure that my tissue was ready. I travel everywhere with my Theragun Mini, so I can actually try and loosen up and do some things and get some blood flow where I need. And then Compex, all of my eSTEM units. What I end up doing is I'll put it on the potentiation phase where it actually will get deep muscle fibers that would have been dormant and activate them. So it helps me get strong by using electric current. You can use your Compex for recovery, light muscle activation and lymphatic drain, and use it on a lighter setting, or you can actually use it on the potentiation phase, which is what I had to do to excite my brain and my nervous system to get some things firing that haven't been fired in a while. So that was that Tuesday night. And then Wednesday, I work all day again, still hour and a half, 2 hours from home. And then I drive back that Wednesday afternoon and I get to my facility and Kurt Majit is at my facility.
And who is Kurt Majit?
So Kurt Majit is, this is such a small world. He played at the University of Tennessee where I was a strength coach when I was there. So I had actually coached him as a college athlete. Then he went on to go play in the NFL. So he was with the Indianapolis Colts, played, I think, 3-4 years in the NFL. And now he's basically 240 pounds of 6% body fat and scares the bejesus out of anybody by his looks. But he's probably one of the most genuine human beings you'll ever meet. Like you cannot say enough about how he treats people and how he tries to improve people's lives just by being nice to them. And he's, hey, Herm, can you help me program something? And I'm like, yeah, like what you need? And he's like, well, I'm trying to prepare for a race that I might have this weekend. And I was like, oh yeah, funny. I think I might be trying to do the same. And I was like, oh yeah, where's your race? And he's like, oh, just around. All of a sudden, we both looked at each other kind of weird. And he was actually there the day that I broke the world record for DecaFit. Or like unofficially, right?
Oh, no way.
So he was actually there that day. And all of a sudden we looked at each other and I said to him, I go, are you going to Vermont? So we were both like, oh, I got something I'm doing this weekend. Oh, I got something I'm doing this weekend. Where's yours? No, where's yours?
Yeah, yeah. Like a Mexican standoff almost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he looked at me and is like, we both signed it, huh? And so there, right then I said, okay, if you don't know what you want to do, then you can follow me. Again, it's all about how do I make my smarter better than someone else's harder? And I know what my body can handle, and I know how to read data. Our facility, we use a Polar heart rate monitoring systems. They are the leader in heart rate technology. You cannot argue with that. There are plenty of people that make great products. Like there are other people that make great heart rate tools. There are other people that make great GPS tools. But across the board, you cannot argue that Polar is the world leader in heart rate technologies. That's where I get all my data. Okay, it gives me my sleep. You would think of Whoop. Whoop, it's great. In fact, I think Whoop and CrossFit just signed a multi-year deal for athlete management. But the way I look at it is if you got Whoop, you don't necessarily own your wristband and you pay for the service month after month. So you have to wear a watch on one hand and you have to wear a wristband on the other to get your data. Polar, it gives me all my sleep data. It gives me how deep I was. It gives me my recovery scores. It gives me my heart rate variability. So what I did was I strapped up and took us through like a metabolic profile on the treadmill for me and Kurt. And we show it up on our big screen in our facility and we can see at what stage do we start tapping into different energy systems. And that's where I know for me what I'm capable of. So I basically took myself to a modified max test that gave me the information I needed to know where I was as far as being in shape and how hard I could push before I was going to go over the edge.
Can you describe that max test for us in a bit more detail on what that actually looked like?
So for this particular one, we wanted to have a little bit of a training effect, but at the same time, not completely tax us for what's going to happen now in 36 hours. What we did was we increased the grade of our treadmill up to 10 degrees incline. And started at a 4 mile per hour walk. And basically all we do is 30 seconds of work, 30 seconds of rest. You keep the grade at 10% incline and you walk for 30 seconds at four, you get off. You hop on at 4.5 miles an hour, hop off. And then 5 and 5.5 and 6.5 and so on until complete failure, until you cannot make the 30 second work segment at a given speed. And that particular day, I ended up completing the 14 or the 14 and a half mile an hour mark at that incline for that speed. So that kind of gave me an indication of where I should be. And I could look at the screen and know where my heart rate was based on what my effort level was. So now I had that data and the metrics I needed then going into the Spartan Games and saying, okay, I know where I can push and I know where I can't.
And what were the metrics that really mattered to you the most going into the games?
I would say, at what point did I start to tap into my anaerobic threshold? And when did I start passing my aerobic capacity and start tapping into my glucose stores, start tapping into ATP, start tapping into things that are going to run away really quick? In events like Spartan events, you have to be set to use oxygen and fats as much as you can, because you have so much of it. You don't have a whole lot of ability to really hit the gas and go really hard for really long. Where can you preserve yourself? So I knew at that stage, like my heart rates were jumping way too quick and I didn't have enough cardiovascular base, which is something that I'm generally pretty good at. You know, you start trying to compete against our world's best and that's all they do is prepare for, you know, longer runs or longer bikes or longer swims and trail runs and trail rides. And that's just not something that I've had any time to be able to dive into. So I knew when I started at slower speeds, tapping into energy systems that I didn't need to be in, I knew I was not going to be able to push as hard as I want, but I'm going to use that to my advantage. And hopefully other people don't really know what they're doing.
So just being informed about what your baseline was just gave you enough to know what you could work with, because you didn't know what the events were going to be. You didn't know how many events per day. You didn't know who the athletes you were competing against were going to be outside of Kurt. What was the biggest hurdle? Like, you mentioned that you had to get a mountain bike. Can you tell me the story about like where you sourced that bike from and how Blair maybe came to the rescue?
Before my wife and I met, she was an avid biker. She loved it. She loves mountain biking. She did a bunch of road biking, but really like mountain bike is where her athleticism can really take over. And she's got a full carbon specialized stump jumper. Luckily, she's taller. So her bike actually would fit me. You know, she's like 5'7". I'm like 5'10 on a good day. So I had an amazing bike I could take with me, but didn't have a way to get it there because I was going to rent a bike in Vermont, but it's in the fall in Vermont. There was not a bike to be rented within 200 miles. So there was no way for me to get a bike. And we ended up going to our local bike shop, the Bike Zoo. And they ended up knowing somebody that let me borrow an airplane travel case. And I packed up my wife's bike, brought it up there, did everything I needed, and I got off the plane, and the change in air pressure on the plane caused the disc brakes to close. I had to pry the disc brakes back open. And what we didn't realize that going into this was that the hydraulics in her fork, there weren't any.
Oh, no.
The button didn't work. There was oil leaking out of it. We just hadn't used it in so long. Now I don't even really have a bike. So I didn't realize that I did the first 20 miles through 4,000 feet of elevation change and didn't have a single shock. My body took a beating. So I'm just riding down the mountains, just wearing it.
Was there anything else that you had to organize and get sorted before the event? Because you mentioned that you had to pack. You've got a bike that at the time you didn't realize wasn't working. What was your go-to gear that you were going to throw into your kit?
I literally just packed up like all of my essentials, thumb tape in case there was a barbell, or I didn't want to bring my Olympic shoes because doubtful that a Spartan event is going to have any Olympic movers, which, surprise, it didn't. So I brought like my Versa lifts just in case I had to try and front squat something, or made sure that you've got knee wraps just in case there's something that you need to wear, wetsuits. So Xterra provided the wetsuits, but again, they called me 72 hours before. I got to see if it's going to actually show up. Otherwise, I was going to try and get into 54 degree water with no wetsuit and see what happens. Like I would have just frozen. So goggles, gloves. Oh, and I guess I'm forgetting all of this mountain bike gear that I've never had. So I went to go get mountain bike shoes, mountain bike helmet, extra gloves, anything you can really think of in case you got to climb ropes and do all these things and you don't know what you're going to have. So it, and then maybe leaving a little first aid kit because you're going to eventually end up getting torn up somehow. And then it was making sure that you had, again, my Theragun or my Compex or, you know, anything else just for recovery. And then another key staple for me are my exogenous ketones. So I actually drink ketones, even though I don't eat ketogenically, I can still get the benefits from being in ketosis, even if I'm not eating ketogenically. So I packed up a bunch of those and helps me with like longer duration activities and muscle preservation during long bouts of activity.
Yeah, it's interesting that you can drink it without maintaining the ketogenic diet and how you use them to your advantage. When did you realize that they were a benefit to your athletic performance?
I started taking them like 4 years ago, knowing that my activity level was going to start changing. Thinking about ketogenic dieting is that was actually developed for epileptic seizures in children and controlling misfires in the brain because of excess glucose. It wasn't designed necessarily for weight loss or weight management, but it turns out that people end up losing weight because they lose muscle glycogen because there's no glucose, you know, really available, and because they're in a caloric deficit. So they're eating less and they're not actually having full, dense carbohydrate, full muscles. So guess what? They're going to lose weight. But then I found out that over the course of time, I wasn't training as much, but yet I was preserving some of my abilities and I was not wasting away as quickly as I anticipated. And the only thing I changed was the addition of exogenous ketones and making sure that I continue to have a, you know, a clean dietary intake. And these ketones are actually helping me to preserve lean mass because as a part of the product, they have some branch chain aminos. So people think of it as like BCAAs, leucine and isoleucine is actually helps to preserve lean mass in caloric deficits. So on top of having some of these branch chain aminos, I'm getting the cognitive benefits of having ketones in my bloodstream. So I can focus better. I can keep going and keep doing things for longer and maintain muscle mass, even if I'm not training as often as I'd like.
Yeah. So even when you are in a calorie surplus, there's a benefit to your performance there in that your muscles are going to be stocked up full of those BCAAs and full of carbohydrates. And yes. I imagine that's going to be super important for a 4-day event like the Spartan Games.
Absolutely. Because you didn't know until the night before what the events were going to look like. So you just have to try and stay as full of glycogen, just carbohydrate stored in your muscle as you could in your liver. Your liver and your muscle holds glycogen. And then everything else is going to be either what you're consuming or what's on our love handles, just fat. How can we break down that adipose tissue and be able to use it for energy?
Yeah, wow. Now, we're getting toward Friday morning around 5 a.m. You bought a flight to Vermont. How did you feel knowing there was no turning back?
at this stage, I actually had somewhat of a sense of relief because I knew I had zero expectations. No one knew who I was. I'm going to go meet some really fun people and try and just go compete as hard as I can. And I know that at the end of all of it, I can at least look myself in the mirror and be like, hey, I gave it everything I could, whether it was win, whether it was lose, first place, last place, middle of the pack, whatever that looked like. I just want to know that my kids will ultimately be able to look at this one day and they're not going to care where daddy scored. But I want them to know that even though I felt terrible by the end of the week because I had nothing left, daddy still gave everything he could. And if they take that life lesson, then it was a win for me.
Can you talk us through arriving at Jodacena's farm and what that was like? Who started showing up? What unfolded next?
When we pulled in mid-afternoon, maybe 3:30, 4 o'clock. Oh, hold on. My daughter just shows up.
Daddy.
Hi, sweetie.
I miss you.
Oh, you miss me? Thank you. Hey, we were just actually talking about you. We were saying daddy needed more unicorn power. Do you remember that? Okay. Okay, here, if you're going to sit on my lap, can you be really quiet for a minute? Thank you. So when I started showing up, I see some people there that I've got no idea. I don't know who some of these big name people are in the Spartan world. At the same time, I knew people like Sam Briggs. I've been a fan of hers for years. And Christy O'Connell, Emma Chapman. If it wasn't for Yancey prior to being like, hey, who's this Hunter McIntyre guy? Like, I wouldn't have had any idea who Hunter McIntyre was other than he was given his invite to the CrossFit Games. I had followed some of that community. I had competed in a little bit of it, but I followed because I actually got my first CrossFit cert back in 2012 to talk against CrossFit for sport performance. I believe in CrossFit methodology. But I also believe in sport performance. And I have athletes that would turn down $1 or $2 million out of high school to come play collegiate sports while I was at the university. And they would say, oh, I don't need your program. I do CrossFit back home. And I'm like, oh, well, that's great. But that's not what you're going to do when you get here. If my job is to create somebody who is amazing at the sport of fitness, I'm going to use CrossFit methodology. But if my job is to create an amazing tennis player or baseball player or soccer player, just learning how to cycle a barbell or do butterfly pull-ups, that might be a tool that somebody might use, but that's not how I'm going to train them to be best at their sport. And we have to understand too that CrossFit has two paths. Do you want to be a competitor or do you want to use CrossFit to help increase your quality of life? You have to take two different paths. So that's why I had followed that sport, because I understood some of it and I enjoyed it on my personal side, but that doesn't mean that was necessarily how I trained my athletes.
Well, that's the end of part two of episode 9. In part 3, Herman takes us behind the scenes of the Spartan Games. And what's cool is part 3 is live now, so you can finish this series. My name is Mike, and this is The Goods. Thanks for listening.